Hale Varsity Magazine presents the Hale Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hale Varsity.
Day by day,
day by day,
we get better and better.
We get better and better.
We get beat, beat.
We get beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
Boom, beat, beat.
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Great to have you on a Thursday. Hale Varsity Radio, Hale Varsity Magazine, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore in studio. TJ Henning brought cupcakes today, producer, engineer, and contributor. Hope you're all right. Busy one today. We'll preview the Ohio State Buckeyes with Tim May, because Ohio State may be a likely on your mind. So we got a takedown coming up. Brandon Vogel, hour two, HaleVarsity.com and magazine. And then our chat, our conversation with newest commit, commit number 11, part of the tremendous secondary Nebraska's recruited for 2018, Mario Goodrich. We will catch up with him in hour two, up in the air, whether we do 525 or 540 with him, because we were supposed to have him yesterday at 525, and that sure as hell worked out. So we are, we will have it. We just don't know when, so stay tuned all 2 hours because you love us. 466-3776, 466-3776-800-825-5865. Numbers to get in on Hale Varsity today. You can always tap the line. Brought to you by Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House. Also on Twitter at JMoore44, at Schmidt underscore radio, at TJ underscore Henning, or always at Hale Varsity. Bird, how the hell are you?
I'm good. Busy. I'm finally feeling better. Had a little bit of the flu bug.
See?
For like
that frightens
36
me.
Hours. It was weird. Weirdest
was it
thing.
Food or was it just
know. Well, cause
the junior passed that along too?
I don't know. Easily could have got something from daycare and threw it on to me.
You know how I dropped off Carson at daycare? Car was still running. That's not nice. I'm kidding.
Throw him out the window?
Well, he flew.
Mm-hmm.
At least he thinks he flew.
Yeah, I don't know. It was just weird.
I always went in with a hazmat suit is my point.
Easily could have been. It was just weird. It was just yesterday was – but you know, food poisoning, you don't really have, I don't know, the achiness and kind of feverish. I don't know. Do you? I've never had like food poisoning that bad before. But
oh, I had a chicken parm at a downtown Lincoln restaurant one time where it was a five-day ordeal.
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
And it was – the aches and pains because of the contorting used when ralphing.
Mm-hmm.
It was that bad.
Yeah, I had a 30-minute bout with some bad salmon I ate. That was an intense own, pain for 30 minutes.
It's your own fault.
It was my own fault.
Your own fault for eating bad salmon.
It was.
Yeah, I don't know.
And eating chicken parm.
Right.
That was my bad.
So good.
No, it doesn't.
So I think I'm finally shaking it, so I feel better. Appetite's coming back, so all good. All good. Be back. It's feel good. Be back in here.
Well, it's good to see you. Should we do a sequel to Corn and Sadness? Because, I mean, yesterday was all about what Nebraska will never be again.
Corn and Sadness. Like, there's nothing there.
Jethro, relax. You know, insult here to this injury. You had the Feinbaum crew ragging after Nebraska. Or pointing out the fact that TV's end-all be-all. We kind of said, no, coaching's what's most important here, and lack of coaching changes.
But it's played a factor.
No,
there's a ton of factors, and I would say it's played some.
Okay.
But I agree. Coaching is be-all, end-all.
But where's it come down to it? Where does TV play into this factor? If we have 10 factors that make you elite or no more, where's TV rank? I think it's 8 or 9. You can find 7 unique things. Bird, you've read this. You've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to Corn and Sadness, as far as Nebraska, Tennessee, Notre Dame never being elite again, that's not a out-on-the-ledge take, because what's been accomplished by Bama and by Nebraska when you were growing up really hasn't been repeated.
No.
I mean, it's been phenomenal.
No, it's been...
They've been the two dynasties, along with Bobby Bowden's, like, 14 straight years of top five finishes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you had it going.
USC was on the verge there.
Right.
At, you know, early 2000s, but that got shut up real quickly with Pete Carroll.
Pete left.
Right.
NCAA was sniffing around, and you got beat by Texas.
Correct.
Ended it.
Correct. Listen, it's kind of funny. I think this time of year, people, there's always the prediction time. It's the... who's rising, who's falling, who's in the elite category, who's not in the elite category. It's just that time of year people coming out there. And, yeah, Nebraska's getting you know, banged up on a little bit. But you can't argue with it, in my opinion. What have we done in the last decade?
It's
a lot of close calls and a lot of coulda, shoulda, woulda.
You know, I was looking at that. And let's get into
it. In my opinion, you just... Yeah, you take it's fair. Like the opinions of whoever it is down in the SEC country or a Sports Illustrated writer or an ESPN writer, whoever it may be, just play better. Win more football games. Win more meaningful football games. Win more games in November. Play for championships.
Yes.
Don't get blown out in national TV. Don't make dumb mistakes to lose close ball games. You know, it's just play better. It's as simple as that.
Handle your business.
Right. Don't get offended by it. I mean, yeah, you want to see positive reinforcement about your football team here in Lincoln. But there's some positive things coming. But again, the foundation of it and everything that's from the history, you want to go from 2000 and you want to go back to all the way to 2007, 2006, wherever, starting of the Pelini era, there was really nothing. There's a lot of close calls and a lot of should have beens.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some stuff looks bright in the future, but it's all outlook. You know, there's still nothing there that really says, okay, you can hang your hat on this. You just don't have that quite yet. And I don't think they're that far off, but there's still a lot of unmarked boxes that you just can't check yet with a pen. Maybe you can do a little pencil in there, and you have that eraser very handy, but there's just too many unanswered questions out there.
Well, let's talk Stuart Mandel, Fox Sports, longtime SI writer, and he always comes out with his rundown, his college football pecking order. This is kind of the, you know, the sequel here to Corn and Sadness from ESPN. Now Fox Sports is chiming in on what Nebraska is and isn't. And listen, I'm not super into the medieval thing. I've never been to medieval times. I point and laugh every time Role Models comes on.
Or Cable Guy.
Cable Guy, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But Role Models, you had all those dudes go to Village Inn or whatever it was, dressed the theme up. They were kings and knights and queens. And
what do they call that? I don't see people doing it in the park here in Lincoln.
It's Rolfing.
Is it Rolfing?
What?
Real live-action role-playing.
Well, the cosplay side of it here is and maybe you or somebody in your family is... got a knight's costume or some tights, and that's okay.
LARPing, live-action role-playing. There you go.
There, that's right. I knew it was a weird...
I learned something new every day from you, TJ.
No, but there are people here in Lincoln, the park that's over there by the zoo and Jim Ager. People are actually doing it.
I've had a friend from high school who's done it.
I almost caused an accident on Normal Street there going south.
Because you couldn't believe what you were watching.
Well, I was like, oh my God, this really happens?
It's a sharp sword, Harry. Right.
LARPing.
I think of folks who dress up and try and storm a castle, okay? Whenever I see the kings and barons and peasants, and when we go medieval themes and knights, okay, I think of Zeppelin IV, the cover,
mm-hmm.
and then I think of, Role Models, the movie.
Your beloved Southeast High School.
That's fine. Right. Okay. Yeah. So, contrary to popular belief, I never got three sheets to the wind and tried on the night costume, the tin. So Stuart Mandel's here. God, I wish you would have filmed that on Normal, people LARPing. Stuart Mandel has kind of his kings of college football, and Bama and Clemson are listed. And really, Clemson's a team that moved into this King category, but he has a big old line through Nebraska. And he explains it this way. He's 41. In my teens, in my 20s, my early to mid-30s, you would never have convinced me Nebraska would one day be viewed as anything less than college football royalty. But today's recruits have not even been born the last time the Huskers have won a conference title. Hello, Monday's show. 1999. Much less Tom Osborne's three national titles in 4 years, 94 through 97. The Big Ten helped financially, but as far as being grouped as a league power, not close to Ohio State, not close to Michigan, not close to Penn State. And Penn State, really, we'll see if they can back up what they did this year. I thought they were going to be on the right track with Bill O'Brien because they won a lot despite the sanctions. But I thought, based on their last two hires post-Joe Pa, they've really done a good job with that. So I can see Penn State climbing back into this college football royalty. Nebraska, per Stuart Mandel, closely resembles Wisconsin and Michigan State. You know what I say to that? Thank you. Because Wisconsin's won the conference or the division the last several years. Wisconsin's played in big-time bowl games the last several years. Wisconsin's winning 11 football games. Aside from 3-9 a year ago, so is Michigan State. They've won 11 games, five of their last 6 years. They're the first Big Ten team to get into a playoff. They're the only team to beat Ohio State in conference twice. So if Nebraska's closer to Wisconsin and Michigan State, I will take that, and I will absolutely agree with that. The problem here is when you look at the list of kings, Bama, Clemson, Florida, Florida State, Miami, Michigan, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Penn State, Texas, USC. I'm getting my red pen of death out here. Miami's no longer a king of college football. Texas is no longer a king of college football. Notre Dame is no longer a king of college football. And Clemson's played well enough three of the last 4 years to make their way. I agree with that. Is Michigan a king of college football? They've got a well-known head coach. Have they done anything on the field?
No,
they're like an old king. They're just good because they've done it, you know, over history. But
they're honest opinion. They're, in my opinion, right now the same level as Nebraska. I think their upside is greater than Nebraska's, just with the Harbaugh factor. Mm-hmm. But you want to talk about a lot of close calls and should have beens. I mean, the last couple of years, you know.
Well, they lost three games last year.
Right. And obviously, the Rich Rod era, you know, then the Brady Hoke era, you know, it's just a changing of coaches, just that cycle that Nebraska's been on.
Even with Lloyd.
Right.
I mean, they won a title, but they were ready to move his ass out the door shortly after.
Which is crazy because they're, what, number two in the nation in 2006?
Yes, yes.
His last year, I believe, and they're ready to move him out. I mean, granted, he was getting up their age, but I don't think he was ready to go.
No, he certainly wasn't.
And he
ready.
Was getting talent in there. I mean, that team was loaded. When we put them in the 05 Alamo Bowl, that team was stocked. I mean, that was – they had everyone still there. And, you know, we were able to obviously beat them. But, I mean, that team had first-rounders galore on that
especially
team.
Especially on offense and skill spots.
Mm-hmm. Defensively, they had top two, three-round picks on there.
So, I think there's maybe a collection of six – I don't think Florida is a king of college football anymore either.
No.
I know they won a championship under Urban 10 years ago, but it's just on the opposite end of that 10-year window. Florida's been 9-4, 7-4, somewhere in between at best, and they've not won the SEC forever.
If they had just a somewhat of an offense,
I don't disagree.
Right. I mean, they would have handled Bama those couple years in those SEC. Mm-hmm. They just had a quarterback or some sort of offense, but they had nothing.
They're awful.
It is terrible.
The Barons now of college football. They're just below that king status. Auburn, they've won two titles. They should be good again this year. Georgia, they've done everything but win. Michigan State and Nebraska, I agree. Oregon's had about a decade run, a little less than. I think Stanford's really knocking on that king door. Tennessee, I guess. A&M, I guess. UCLA, I guess. I think with Fuente, Virginia Tech's going to be good, and for sure, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. When you get into some of the Knights, Arizona State is a peasant, not a knight. Arizona State's not been good for 20 years. Arkansas, I guess I'll keep them as a knight because they're over 500. BYU, absolutely, they're above the peasant level. Illinois is not. They have Washington here as a knight. And I know they just had one good year removed from an 8-6 season, but they're primed and ready. Mm-hmm. I think Missouri is now in peasant level. I think Syracuse is at peasant level. I think South Carolina is at peasant level, as is Baylor, as is Illinois. I don't like his list here in his definition and categorization of some of these teams. I don't know his window. Is it last 15 years? Is it 10 years? And from a peasant's standpoint, I don't think Washington State, biased, or Minnesota, for that matter, are peasants of college football. They've won 9 games the last 3 years, and I know everybody wins 9 now, but they've done it. Mm-hmm. Especially when you look at that in comparison to Illinois or Missouri or Syracuse. Is it a slap in the face to you when a national writer says that Nebraska has been moved out of, for lack of a better term, the blue blood category? Can't argue with the results and what Nebraska hasn't done the last 10 to 15 years. We'll dive into the preseason recommendation from Athlon and Ohio State up next with Tim May.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio and JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's talk Ohio State football. And he knows Ohio State. Tim May with us, Columbus Dispatch. Tim, how long have you been covering the Buckeyes, man? For quite a while, correct?
Probably too long, but since 1984, so going on my 34th season.
34 and counting. That's impressive, and Ohio State is equally impressive. The offseason is here, and lists are out, rankings are out, and Tim wanted to talk a little bit about the Buckeyes, and after spring, what's the sense you got with Coach Meyer and this Ohio State team? High hopes a year ago. They just fell short, not only against Penn State, but the college football playoff game didn't go well against eventual champ Clemson. Where's the program at right now in regard to their own expectations? They feel okay about next season.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of an interesting scenario because last year, you know, Urban Meyer was pretty upbeat about what was going on because he had a bunch of, you know, he was replacing 16 starters. You know, that's a team that was the youngest team, I think, in major college football going into the season in the sense of the youngness of the roster plus of what they had replaced. And, you know, yet expectations were still high. And, he embraced them even though he knew that team was going to be in for a learning curve. And as you found out, I mean, it did pretty good, pretty well on that learning curve until it went off the edge of the highway there against Clemson, the first shutout Urban Meyer has ever suffered as a head coach, or Baird, or whatever you want to call it, endured. But obviously, since then, he hired Kevin Wilson, the former Indiana coach, as his offensive coordinator. And you know, anybody who knows anything about Big Ten football knows Kevin Wilson's one of the more respected offensive minds in the country, but especially in the Big Ten the last 6 years. And then he hired Ryan Day, new quarterbacks coach, late of the San Francisco 49ers, and before that, the Philadelphia Eagles. In essence, he was with Chip Kelly the last 2 years on his journey across the NFL continent. And they really like where the offense, I think, where it got to in the spring from the standpoint of being able to throw the ball with a little bit more authority. Last year, the passing game, for want of another word, was mediocre at best against the better opponents. You know, and with that said, the offense was the same way against the better opponents, and which is really odd because what an odd year. They started the year setting a school single-game record for offensive production going back 120 years against Bowling Green. They scored over 60 points, what, 3 times? two times in a row, and yet their offense at the most critical times really stunk up the joint. So, you know, bottom line was they wanted to get that straightened out. They think they're on a good footing defensively, and that's where Urban Meyer, you can always tell if he's feeling pretty good. It's kind of based on he thinks he's got a defense that allows him to maybe take some chances with his offense, if you follow my drift there. And they think they definitely have that in this defense.
Well, they've reloaded. I mean, Lattimore, Hooker, Conley. I mean, they're all first-round guys, and they replaced a bunch of first-round guys, and they were just exceptional. I loved watching Ohio State secondary. Nebraska fans did not, but it was impressive, and the front seven defensively looks to be a strength. I want to go back to your quarterback play, though, because you mentioned the point totals that were put out early last season, and that was on the road in Norman. And Ohio State dismantled Oklahoma, and you thought, okay, Barrett in the passing game, they've taken another step forward. But as the season grew forward against some of the better teams, the downfield passing game was the issue. And if Ohio State can have that, and I'm thinking of Cardale when they made their title run, that makes this offense unstoppable. What do you think Ryan Day can do for Barrett? Where's the growth going to happen? Is it in accuracy? Is it in comfort? I mean, what's lacking from JT at all? Because I know he can run it, and I know intermediately he's been accurate, but the deep ball's been the issue. Can Day fix that?
Yeah, but this wasn't an exercise. It was basically at JT Barrett's feet, in my opinion. And the whole ball of wax sort of like came melted at certain times last year. I'm talking about from a pass protection standpoint.
Sure.
Isaiah Prince at right tackle had problems without a doubt against some of the better defensive ends in the Big Ten, et cetera, definitely against Clemson. Their wide receivers, you didn't really have one. Yeah, Noah Brown had those four touchdown catches against Oklahoma, and then what, he had three or four the rest of the year.
Sure.
And I always like to give the caveat or the throw this out there too. I mean, that was against Oklahoma. You know, the Big 12 does not play defense. So take that for what it's worth. But it's pretty I'm talking about on a grand scale, let's put sure. it that way. But bottom line is, it wasn't just a one-trick pony problem when it came to the passing game. And definitely JT Barrett struggled at times, but a lot of reasons he struggled at times was I don't think he thought he had to put balls right on the money sometimes for some guys to make catches, et cetera. They just didn't have that wide receiver step forward and be the go-to guy. And with the exception, like I said, of one game, Noah Brown, and he had also had the winning touchdown catch in overtime against Wisconsin. But it was just really odd to watch it because you didn't know what you were going to get from one week to the next in the passing game. And like I said, I throw a lot of that on just the pass protection issues they had. Definitely against Clemson, they had pass protection issues. But so they really, in the bottom final sense, they were kind of reluctant to go to the passing game, especially the downfield passing game. That was the definite number one priority by Urban Meyer in the spring, was to figure out a way to get the ball down the field to receivers and have receivers make plays. And that sounds stupid. Who else would be making the play? You know, your right guard. But bottom line is, they think they did that. You know, Terry McLaurin and Paris Campbell, two guys who were starting receivers last year, they thought really made huge strides in the spring. And, you know, you've got Trayvon Grimes coming in, one of the elite pass receivers in the country, and in the Rivals.com ratings, et cetera. He's going to be a freshman if he comes off his knee injury like they think he will. He could be a factor right away. Benjamin Victor, who stepped up late in the year last year, didn't have a great spring, but they expect big things out of him. I mean, there are quite a few guys, K.J. Hill, guys who could become a little more household names than they were last year. Last year, they were kind of household names, but in a bad sense.
Sure. Tim Mays with us. We're talking Ohio State Hail Varsity Radio, previewing the Buckeyes post-spring at Tim_May Sports. Tim, what do you think of Penn State and Michigan? Do you think Ohio State has a clear advantage over those two? Is it going to be a dogfight for the East? And granted, we're 100 days from kickoff now, but just what you're hearing around the region on the Big Ten East, is Ohio State still the favorite by most folks?
I think Ohio State's still a favorite, but you know, there's no doubt about it that the last four or five games, especially of last season, Penn State – made a tremendous jump offensively with Trace McSorley when they finally really embraced the spread offense. And, you know, it was after the Ohio State game because, I mean, let's face it, Ohio State kind of had that game under control from a defensive standpoint, but they give up a blocked punt that turns into a field goal by Penn State, and then they give up a blocked field goal that turns into a touchdown return by Penn State, and they lose that game in unbelievable fashion. I mean, it was really odd to watch that game. But the bottom line was, after that game is when the Penn State offense really took off. We all saw what happened in the Rose Bowl against USC. I mean, Trace McSorley's a real deal. He's got Saquon Barkley back. And, you know, we were talking about JT Barrett a while ago, where JT Barrett and Saquon Barkley shared each got a Chicago Silver Football Award for being the MVP of the Big Ten last year. So, you know, there's Penn State with one of the Super Football guys, and Ohio State with the other one at quarterbacks. I think what really helps Ohio State is Mike Weber is back at running back, and he was 1,000-yard back last year, and one of the three freshmen in history at Ohio State, although he was a redshirt freshman. I always think that should definitely be an asterisk, but one of only three freshmen to ever rush for 1,000 yards plus for Ohio State. He's back. They're getting DeMario McCall on beam, but J.K. Dobbins, a freshman, coming in. What I'm trying to say is, that's why you think this Ohio State team probably still should be favored, is they've got some guys stepping up from learning years last year, and they've got some guys coming online that really, really look like they have the juice, to borrow the expression. But so does Penn State. You know, Michigan, boy, losing what they had, 19 guys either get drafted or sign free agent contracts in the NFL after last season, you got to figure it's got to be some kind of a rebuilding year for Jim Harbaugh and those guys. But I think they've got quality players in that program again. So, and I think Harbaugh is definitely a big time quality coach. So I think that will be the big three, mm-hmm, probably in the order going in of Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan.
Last thought here, Tim. What are you expecting from Nebraska and Coach Riley?
I'm expecting them to continue to improve. I mean, I picked them last year to win the Big Ten Conference West, and you know, I was wrong about a lot of things last year. But I'm still stunned at what happened in Ohio Stadium. I mean, that was just wow. I mean, just when you think a team has kind of got its act together, it really caught one in the solar plexus. But I think it will be better. I think it definitely would be better on defense in the bigger games next year, this coming season. And I think offensively, they're always going to be pretty good with Mike Riley calling the shots.
No, they should be better offensively, a fit at quarterback. Diaco is really good at what he does. What did you expect here, Tim, about 90 seconds? What did you expect from Nebraska, though, as they joined the Big Ten? Did you expect them to come in and kind of own parts of it, or did you expect them to struggle like they have?
No, we knew Nebraska, if you're paying attention, you know, people paying attention, knew Nebraska wasn't the same Nebraska of the 60s and 70s when I was growing up watching Alabama beat Nebraska 2 years in a row, by the way. I was a big Alabama fan growing up back in 64, 65, 66, but I won't bring that up. I don't want to hurt your feelings. But then in 70, you know, the Devaney teams got even with Bear Bryant back in the early 70s with Rich Glover and Johnny Rogers and those guys, maybe two of the greatest teams in the history of college football. But, you know, they, a little bit of parity hit them. And plus, you know, Lincoln is kind of out there, man. It's an outpost, whether you want to, you know, admit it or not, some Nebraska fans. But, you know, recruiting is the name of the game, and they kind of had to get that act back together. But, you know, people forget, you know, Pelini had them in the Big Ten championship game. So it didn't go very well that one game, but the one of them in particular. But bottom line is they haven't been that far off, but they've always seemed to be lacking either usually on the defensive side, which is really stunning, knowing where Bo Pelini came from, et cetera. And then again last year when they really needed that defense, it wasn't quite there, definitely in the Ohio State game. I think that's an understatement. But that's where, you know, if they can get that straightened out, you know, they could definitely be a factor again. I mean, I believe in the longtime traditional powers, and I think Nebraska does have a chance of bouncing back in a big way.
Tim, we'll catch up again, man. Great to talk for a few minutes. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Hail Varsity Radio Show. Here's Chris and Jay.
Big thanks to Tim May, Ohio State preview. Got a new quarterback coach for JT Barrett. Will that help? Will that make a difference? Your chance coming up, a six-month online subscription for you to HaleVarsity.com. Go see Rick and your friends at Sauter Heyman today, tonight, this weekend. Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds, 100% real diamonds that are grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. They're eco-friendly and they're 10 to 40% less than traditional earth-mined diamonds. And they have all the characteristics of earth-mined diamonds, and they are some of the biggest and best sellers in Sauter Heyman history. Find out more about pure-grown diamonds, Nebraska's exclusive dealer. Your friends at Sauter Heyman, 12th and O downtown, South Point Pavilion, around West in Grand Island. You can log on, sauterheyman.com. Let's go to the NFL for a minute. We will catch up with Brandon Vogel in about 20 minutes, get his thoughts on some Husker baseball, get his thoughts on many of the things written and targeted about Nebraska football this week. And then Mario Goodrich, Husker commit number 11 for 2018, next hour. I say Richard Sherman, you say what? You think of what? I'm going to be pretty stupid here and say beef jerky first.
Alberto beef jerky.
I think of an evil just look, and his voice makes sense to sound like someone's stomach.
Sure. And, yeah, well, it's
Stephen A.'s voice, mm-hmm. but yeah. I'm just saying Richard being kind of grumpy and gruff. That makes sense.
Opinionated. That's always
okay. That's what you say.
Opinionated. Yeah, he's very, you know, he thinks very highly of himself. Which he's a damn good corner. Mm-hmm. Let's get. I mean, I think he's, you know, if, what is that? When the Seahawks were at their best, I mean, he did. He took away sides of the field. You know, mm-hmm. he was that good. I think he's slipped off a little bit, but he's still one of the best corners without a doubt mm-hmm. in the National Football League. But very, very opinionated, thinks very highly of himself, and is not scared to let people know what he thinks.
That includes teammates and coaches and coordinators, and we talked a little bit about this as the draft was nearing. Is Richard Sherman going to get dealt, and is he the reason Seattle didn't become a dynasty? Their window's closing more so than being wide open. ESPN today and ESPN.com today spent a little time on Seattle. Seth Wickersham is a senior writer at ESPN, and he's got some info here on what's been going on. And this has been going on in Seattle since 2014.
There's something about Wilson in the locker room that bothers teammates that goes beyond the normal jealousies that go to a star quarterback. I'm not sure that it's all fair. It just exists, and it doesn't really need Wilson to exist anymore. It almost seems to like exist without him. But I think that the main thing, again, is that like, if that pass is complete, or if they run the ball there, a lot of the annoyances go away. But at this point, Russell Wilson is treated like the franchise quarterback, and I think a lot of players in the defense don't think he's quite there. And there was a practice in 2014 where Richard Sherman intercepted Wilson and he threw the ball back to him and he said, "You effing suck." Mm. And it started a fight. And, you know, I don't think that Sherman was trying to, I think that he was trying to get Wilson to improve. I think he was trying to get the standard of the quarterback to be raised to the standard of the defense. And I think that what you saw last year with Richard Sherman and why he was so frustrated is he felt that that standard, that championship standard, the Seahawks that that defense created was only being held, the only people being held to that standard were the people on defense.
There it is. Infighting, jealousy, pettiness, minimal to no respect for your quarterback by your leader on defense. And it goes back to pre-interception in the Super Bowl. It goes back to that 2014 season. You know how 2015 ended with the interception in the end zone. Mm-hmm. The defense and Sherman, they had in their mind, we're going to go down as the best defense ever to win a Super Bowl because we smoked Peyton Manning and we beat Tom Brady. And they didn't because of Russell Wilson. And Russell's this sacred cow. He's protected. He's a golden child. And Pete Carroll will not call him out. Does this sound like ultra crazy dysfunction, or is it, hey, it's Tuesday and it's an NFL rocker room, moving on here? You tell me, Jeff.
There's, I mean, that's a, doesn't sound too crazy in my opinion. It's a good, it's a funny story. It cracks me up that he threw the ball back and said, "You suck." That's hilarious. But
he's not moved on from it.
Right.
He has not moved on. It's gotten worse, and it was like he had post-traumatic stress because of it when he went nuts last year at the end of a game because they threw from the one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You tell me this. Is Russell being overly protected by Seattle? The defense, in my opinion, have every right to say, all right, we're the reason, A, you've won as many games as you have, and two, give us some credit here for it. The offense has been bad. The offense was really bad for Seattle last year.
Well, to Russell Wilson's credit, they've lost some offensive linemen to injury, and guys are just, you know, they can't block for line. Me. And granted, how mobile he is. And let's be honest, the loss of Marshawn Lynch.
Sure.
That's been a lot of things. I mean, that was a hell of a tandem back there, those two. And you got that zone read look kind of going back there. It's like, you know, pick your poison. That defense is always solid in Seattle, but it's just in.
But they're frustrated, and it's been growing for two years.
You can't put all the blame on Russell Wilson. But it's easy to because he's the face of the franchise. He's getting the money.
The defense didn't feel like they've been given enough praise for this ascension.
I mean, there's more than plenty. I think the whole Legion of Boom. That defense. Listen, they have an attitude that they kind of had that Pete Carroll type attitude, that the swagger, the aggressiveness, the cockiness, the don't hold anything back, voice your opinion, kind of what Richard Sherman possesses. But the defense can have their good games, offense can have their good games. Offense is going to pick the defense some games. Sometimes the offense is going to be terrible. The defense is going to pick it. It's going to happen. But if you cannot protect your quarterback, you don't have. They've had a good running back there. I mean,
they've had guys they've signed that are journeymen.
Exactly. But again, you have to get some blocking up front. They just haven't had that. They haven't had the consistent play up front to make Russell Wilson better, to get the run game going. And it just teams are just teeing off because, okay, you can't block. We're just going to bring the house or just do different things to where, okay, you're not a threat. They don't have to load the box to try to stop the run with Marshawn. They can sit back there and say, okay, we'll let you do what you do. We'll sit in there with seven guys up there. We'll sit back with four guys in the secondary. And you know what? We're okay. You're not a threat. We're going to take it as it is. And it just puts – it's just not good enough. I mean,
internally, though, can they bury the hatchet for one more run? Because the defense needs to get over themselves and move on from the Super Bowl. And that needs to be Sherman. Mm-hmm. And conversely, the offense needs to block better, and Russell needs to accept some criticism and even take some criticism. We'll continue this discussion, but I thought it's just fascinating. They've dipped from what they were, and yeah, there's been injuries, there's no beast mode.
They're still going to be there as bad as the NFC West.
But it comes down to infighting and lack of chemistry.
Former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
That thing is big, Jay. That thing looks hurt, Jay. Oh, man, pull back up, Jay. Jay, we could get some big money for that.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Wind of that hour one, Brandon Vogel coming up next hour. Mario Goodrich, Husker commit next hour around 5:40. That's been confirmed. Patrick's been on hold, wants to talk Seahawks. Patrick, thanks for hanging on. Go ahead.
How's it going?
Good, man. What do you know?
Well, you know, you guys mentioned it a few minutes ago, and you kind of stole my thunder. When Marshawn left, Seattle's a run first, team first. They pound the ball at you, and the success we had was when you ran the football and then brought play action and then run the read option. Russell's a very good quarterback, don't get me wrong. I love the guy to death, but he can't. He's not Aaron Rodgers and Brady where you can throw 55 times a game and have him win it. That will happen on occasion, but not consistently. We've got to have a running attack
in order for that to happen. And Richard's just reminding him constantly, it sounds like, that he's not Brady or Rodgers.
And Richard Sherman is Richard Sherman. I love the guy to death. He just needs to cool it every once in a while. But I think Eddie Lacy will bring a little bit of that back, because Marshawn was just a big guy that would wear you down. And I, you know, hopefully Eddie can be into shape, but that's what we need in order for us to be successful. And hope you guys have a great afternoon.
Patrick, appreciate the call, man. Thanks. There's a few Seahawks fans running around. I mean, there's two bandwagon fans I live with. But
right. There's the a guy that does the show in the mornings right next to us over here.
Well, he's
he is. Well, he's
McKay's from there. Yeah, Matty McKay's a huge Seahawks.
Right. I'm not saying he's bandwagon, but he's like, yeah,
he's huge.
Right.
I think he's got a Jacob Green jersey, for the love of God. So he's a founder and member.
Jay, could you tell in the locker room, was it easy to tell if guys hated each other, like they're on the opposite sides, or did somebody have to tell you, like, hey, those two guys don't get along?
I think the peeing in the guy's locker constitutes hate.
The locker room's majority of the locker room that I've been in, they've gotten along.
Okay.
There was never too much. And usually, just some guys, though, they just hashed it out, though. If there was a problem, you got in a fight on the field. But, guys that are friends on the field or in the, you know, off the field, they get in fights all the time in practice. But it was just part of it. You know, stuff happens and you move on.
I like it. All right. No fights today yet.
Just wait.
Sweet. We don't have any backpacks to drop like it's sixth grade, you know? Yes, Brandon Vogel coming up, Mario Goodrich coming up. Caller three, caller four, just one?
Just doing the family four-pack right
now. Okay, thank you, TJ. God love you. Caller four right now, a four-pack. Is this for Sunday?
This is for Sunday, yes.
A four-pack of Salt Dog tickets for Sunday right now, 466-3776 1-800-825-5865. A four pack of Salt Dog tickets right now for Sunday at Haymarket. Next hour, we will have barbecue passes to give away for Saturday's game, and also a chance for you to get the HaleVarsity.com online subscription. So a four pack for Sunday, family four pack right now with Hale Varsity and ESPN. Caller 4-466-3776, 1-800-825-5865. Busy first hour. We talked uneasiness between Richard and Russell. Tim May talked Buckeyes and the Kings of College Football. Nebraska no longer in that king category, according to Stuart Mandel. Brandon Vogel next. Mario Goodrich, 30 minutes away. Hour 2 of Hail Varsity next.
Hail Varsity Magazine presents the Hail Varsity Radio Show, the authority on all things Huskers. Spanning across the state, no one else talks Huskers like Hail Varsity.
Day by day!
Day by day!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
We get beat, beat!
We get beat, beat!
Boom, beat, beat!
Boom, beat, beat!
Varsity Radio Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt and former Blackshirt Jay Moore.
Corn and sadness, like there's nothing there.
Oh, it's Corn and Sadness, the sequel. I mean, you see Nebraska putting out recreations of popular movies with their coaches.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like Speed and Pirella.
All gas, no brakes. Yeah.
Right.
And what was the Bad Boys?
Yeah. Uh-huh. You had Coach Dubb and then Dante.
Will Smith and
Dante Williams.
And
Martin Lawrence.
Martin Lawrence.
Yeah. I like that. So how would you put the movie poster Corn and Sadness out there?
Who?
We'd bring in Brandon Vogel of HaleVarsity.com and Magazine to get us rocking in hour two. Vogues, there's a lot to talk about. It's been pinata week for Nebraska, apparently. But from a movie poster standpoint, corn, C, not P, and sadness, how would you go with it? I mean, you'd have to pick Switzer and put his picture up there for the sadness part. And then, I don't know, maybe him over a grill with an ear of corn. And I'm just throwing it out there. How would you go art director on this for me?
Well, isn't like 90% of Field of Dreams corn and sadness?
Ah.
You know, eventually at the end, Kevin Costner builds his baseball field in the middle of Iowa and gets some happiness out of it. But it's sort of the chase for happiness or the avoidance of sadness. So I might just shove it off in Iowa, I guess is my answer.
Okay, I like that. Vogues, what's your takeaway here on the Feinbaum show comments and even Stuart Mandel today, Fox Sports, when it comes to his ranking of football programs in Power Five? He has Kings and Knights and Peasants and Barons. And have you ever witnessed any LARPing? Because that's something that we talked about where per Step Brothers, and according to Jay Moore's trained eye, if you're along Normal Boulevard in Lincoln at some point during nice weather, you're going to see folks dressed up in medieval times trying to storm a castle. Have you ever seen anything like that before?
I do not have any firsthand experience with LARPing, though if I did see it, I would certainly stop and watch for at least like 5 minutes. I'm intrigued. Now I feel kind of sad that I haven't. As far as the Feinbaum thing goes, you know, I wrote a little bit about it on this morning on the website, but to me, that's putting a lot of weight behind that sort of TV advantage that Nebraska had at one point. And yes, it was an advantage to some degree. Yes, it's gone now. But to say that Nebraska can't be what it once was because it no longer has that edge on teams, I think it's a pretty big step. And just when you start to stack it up against other things, when you look at Boyd Epley and the creation of the strength and conditioning program, you look at the fact that he had two Hall of Fame coaches back-to-back. All of those things, in my mind, matter a lot more than whatever number of recruits, and I think it has to be pretty small, that may have come to Nebraska based on the fact that the Huskers were on TV four times a year while Missouri was on TV once.
It was on once against Nebraska, and Nebraska smoked it. Brandon, come on. Right? Yeah, I mean, to me, and TJ and I hit on this yesterday, but I wanted to get your thoughts and take on it. I mean, it's getting phenomenal views on HaleVarsity.com. I look at Nebraska, and I tend to agree that it'll never be 94 through 97. It'll never be 60-3, and it's not going to be four championships, 8 years for Saban. I mean, I think it comes back to the coaches. That's how great they are. And we were kind of chatting before the show, you and I were, what's remarkable about what Bama's done is the assistant turnover. I mean, think of the offensive coordinators and now defensive coordinator that are head coaches at major programs, even rivaling programs. And Bama's kept on trucking. I think you're going to see teams rise and fall, maybe not to the Iowa degree, but more so like what Clemson has done, as in you're going to crank out 9 or 10 wins, have a sweet spot where you have the world's greatest quarterback, and then maybe drift back down to a 10-3 type deal. I think that's your best hope. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of the, I guess, hand-wringing in any of these kinds of conversations comes from how you define greatness. And I think we define it differently in the moment than we do historically. Mm-hmm. So we've all, as I guess native Nebraskans, had that experience where you're out somewhere, you're away, you're on vacation, and somebody learns you're from Nebraska, and the conversation immediately turns to football. They're like, oh, yeah, I remember those great Nebraska teams from the 80s and 90s, which is true. I mean, they were great teams. It was a remarkably consistent program, probably the most consistent program over the last 50 or 60 years. But, what you know, Nebraska lost 2-3 games a year a lot of time in the 80s. That's still a great season. But you look at that decade and competing for national titles. To me, I think how you define that long term is this team in the discussion a lot? And you tend to forget, well, did they actually compete for a national title in this year, or were they just there again? And that's what I remember. And you tend to remember the latter. You look at Oklahoma. I qualify Bob Stoops' tenure there as great. And I don't even know if most Oklahoma fans do. I know some don't, but Oklahoma, since he arrived and when he got there, they certainly hadn't been in that discussion consistently, is there. Like, you look at the AP top 25 preseason every year, you expect to see Oklahoma somewhere in the Big Ten. To me, that's pretty great because it's really, really hard to do. But when it comes time to sort of divide these things up and talk about these teams and where they stand in the pecking order, I think they're held to a little bit of a higher standard.
Vogue, well, for some reason you brought up Stoops, and it just kind of takes him back to Coach Soles for some reason. And you talk about, and we've kind of talked about coaching turnover and similar programs like a Michigan, how they've had constant turnover, similar to what Nebraska's had in the last over the last decade. I look at, you go back to Coach Solich. Do you ever go back and think what could have been if Solich never got fired after that 03 season?
Yeah, I definitely do, because, you know, that was the start of a cycle that Nebraska kind of hasn't been able to get out of. And it's not that uncommon for a team that's won as much as Nebraska has. But anytime you're in the mode of firing a coach who just won 9 or 10 games, people are going to notice. They're going to notice and use it as sort of evidence that maybe expectations have gotten out of whack. But you look at that 2003 season and sort of the bounce back it was from the year previously, the turnover it had brought on the staff with hires that seemed to work, including Bo Pelini, a defensive coordinator, I think it's natural to kind of wonder if you let that thing unfurl a little bit more, if things turn out differently, I guess. And, you know, Steve Peterson obviously made his decision. And I think you can judge the validity of that decision, and in hindsight, it looks pretty plain. But the thing he was trying to protect against is sort of the topics we're talking about today, which is once you slip off that level, it becomes hard to get off the treadmill, and each sort of coaching hire you make then takes on a little bit of an added pressure every time you make it, because everyone knows what Nebraska was and where it wants to be. But you also can't help but fixate on sort of where Nebraska is currently, if that makes sense.
Vogue, let's talk about where we think Nebraska is currently with Stuart Mandel's write-up. It's 10-year anniversary for him. Now he's at Fox. He was in Sports Illustrated, and he does the hierarchy, the pecking order. And again, medieval times theme here, so grab your tights. Kings, barons, knights, peasants. And he has a giant line through the Nebraska name on the Kings list. Nebraska's moved down to the Barons list. Clemson has moved up to the Kings list, as is LSU. But Nebraska and Tennessee have been moved out, almost kind of like the Premier League. You get to watch. What do you think of that? Do you think Nebraska is still one of the kings of college football, or have they earned their way off of that pedestal? Now are they kind of at a second tier?
I guess it depends on your perspective a little bit. And when you look at it from somebody who has to create an annual list, if you just never have any movement, well, it doesn't make for a very engaging list. But studying the history of college football, I think, would indicate that you probably shouldn't have much movement year to year. The teams that have historically won and rank in the top 10 or 15 all time are there for a reason. And it's really hard to unseat those teams. And I think most of these lists end up being a little bit too reactionary. Like, you can justify dropping Nebraska from tier one to tier two based on the last 10 years or so, however far you want to go back, in the same way that you probably could have dropped Oklahoma off there in 1996. But they're there now. So the question for me becomes, why are they there now? And I think what we see is, for in any program, really, you basically max out at the level that your coach's ability maxes out as well. So when you have Nick Saban at Alabama, he's the best coach in the game, and you can be the best program in the game. what's different about these sort of, I guess, blue blood programs, whatever you want to term them, is they get more mulligans. So what I mean by that is they're able to command sort of the best coaches in the game, or they should be. If you drop from that, then that's something worth being concerned about. But B, also, when the powers that be decide that Coach A has got to go, you never have to worry, well, is the money there? Who answers our phone call? So you get more turns at the plate, essentially, in trying to find that great coach. And when you find one, lo and behold, a lot of these traditionally great programs get back to being great again. That's the part of it that I think gets ignored. We can, you know, and all of the sort of program inherent advantages and disadvantages are worth talking about, but there's not one of them, I don't think, that can't be wiped out by just getting one of the three or four best coaches in the game.
Vogue's about 2 minutes here, and you've got on HaleVarsity.com three half-baked Big Ten takes. And I don't want to ask you, you know, your full-baked Big Ten takes. I mean, I don't want you to get lost in a black light room or anything. So kind of give me a little snippet of things that you're serious about. You're not just hot taking or clicking here. You have some conviction behind these things that are maybe out there.
Yeah, my full big takes are always kind of college football is random and unpredictable, and who knows what's going to happen. But that doesn't make for very good copy. So I decided to go with things that I just mostly believe at this point. And quickly, I'm really buying DJ Durkin at Maryland. I like the staff that they have. I'm really impressed by the fact that they were able to run the ball so well last year without much of a passing threat. And, you know, you start to spin that forward. You look at Michigan and everything they have to return. Maryland could up and surprise some people and kind of be in that top three discussion, I think, with a couple of upsets. Another one, I also really like Jeff Brohm at Purdue. When you look at the history of that program, Joe Tiller as sort of the most sustained period of success there, and how Jeff Brohm coaches with a, you know, pass-heavy attack, you start to think about Purdue, can they get a top-line quarterback? I think they can. They've had a bunch of them. From there, if you can get that, you'll find receivers. I like Nick Holt, the defensive coordinator. So I think there's a chance that that hire might end up being better than probably the marquee hire in the Big Ten, which is P.J. Fleck to Minnesota. And it's just based on identity. So those were a couple of the ones that I pulled out of the oven a little bit early today.
I like that. And I think Brohm, and you have a guy who gets Purdue and was around when Purdue was Drew Breesing it with Tiller. Yeah, he's going to get the direction they need to go, and he'll find his way on down to Texas and get a guy that's too small, too short, not fast enough, and they'll sling it around the yard and be dangerous again. Vogues, we want you to have a great weekend. We will bother you again for the forecast tomorrow for a few minutes. But thanks for jumping on today and a lot of Nebraska news this week to kind of cover and some interesting lists and topics and points of discussion. And we appreciate you jumping on with us, man.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Have a good one. There he is, Brandon Vogel, HaleVarsity.com and magazine at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. We had to get Vogue's take here on corn and sadness. Mm-hmm. We had to get Vogue's take here on medieval times when it came to the college football pecking order. A 6-month subscription is yours right now to HaleVarsity.com. Caller 3, caller 4. A 6-month subscription for you. The ultimate online fan experience, HaleVarsity.com. Inside info, recruiting updates, and breaking news all there in a message board community you'll love. Caller 3, caller 4 right now, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865.
Forget to catch any segment of the show?
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Find the podcast of the show on HaleVarsity.com or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
All right, all right, all right.
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
15 minutes, Mario. Super Mario Goodrich. commit number 11. Mario Goodrich, 15 minutes. Jay Moore right now. Chris Schmidt, TJ Henning. Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Thanks to Brandon Vogel. Good stuff. Hot Reads with Vogues, HailVarsity.com. So Sam McEwen, very talented as well. Right up with the Omaha World Herald. Touched on just the need for just fantastic athletes on defense. And kind of the two-pronged reality Nebraska's in right now with the Big Ten. You need line play to be good, and you need athletes to match up with the Ohio State athletes. That's why we talked to Tim May in hour one. No time like now to hear what Ohio State's reloading with. So we talked to him an hour ago. But that's really what is facing Nebraska here if they want to, not just on paper, but on the field, change the question marks. Well, where's Nebraska at as a program? Where's Nebraska at as a West contender? Where's Nebraska at in the Big Ten as a whole? Where's Nebraska on the national scene? All of these things that we've spent the last 2 weeks babbling about. And it comes down to your offensive and defensive line play and your skill dudes. Can your skill guys beat the other guys' skill guys? And let's get into it. I tell you what, Jay, you look at what Nebraska's done, at least right now, with the 18 class. Mm-hmm. Mario, we're talking to here in 10 minutes at a corner. Buki, very talented. You've seen film on all these dudes. Chase Williams, another talented guy. Mm-hmm. You look at those guys, and with some development, some seasoning, and already their natural gifts, you're probably in lockstep here with what Nebraska's priority has been to go get athletes. Because if you have a secondary that's so good and deep and talented, it can really screw up an opponent's offense. And a couple of highlights in the article. One, opponents completed 60% of their passes against Nebraska. Two, I look at Ohio State and that secondary that just went to the NFL. You can't throw on Ohio State, and because they had good line play, you couldn't run. So have fun scoring is my point. And what it came down to, the Achilles heel for Ohio State last year, it was special teams, 10 points of the loss to Penn State. Mm-hmm. And then Clemson's D-line, which is probably going to be the best in football this year, smoked a one-dimensional Ohio State offense last year. Do you like what Nebraska's doing? Do you feel good about it? Obviously, you're a guy that needs to see field results. But as far as the blueprint here of getting athletes to combat athletes, you can speak to that a bit with what a secondary can do.
Yeah, obviously, O-line, D-line play is paramount.
Because you got to win that.
Absolutely.
Meaning you got to beat, Iowa, you got to beat Wisconsin.
Controlling line of scrimmage is the most important thing.
You got to have that line of scrimmage to beat those two teams to even get a shot at Ohio State.
Right. But in general, just the way football's going, just the spread attack. Let's get our good athletes and see how against your supposedly good athletes. Let's try to out athlete you. I mean, obviously, you want the best athletes at all 11 positions on the field at one time. That's ideal. But anymore, where the game of football, you look at it, it's 3 to 4 wide receivers. It's a matchup game. You know what? When it comes down to it, if you know, no matter what you're going into it, like, you know what? They can't outmatch us. They can't put their best wide receiver against our best corner or our best safety. And we still know we're in good shape. We know without a doubt. So I get that. But I still need some convincing a little bit more on the whole DB thing, because I still think, okay, what if you have your great D-line and you're just getting after the quarterback so much that he doesn't have a piss to pot in, or a pot to piss in to throw the ball, it makes it tough. Exactly. He's saying it's obviously even harder. But I get it. I understand. But the nice thing is, too, is you get these athletes, you get bigger corners, that can maybe eventually they get a little bigger when they get into college and they become safeties. And they still get that. They possess that great speed and athleticism. Or you get the safeties, the bigger safeties that can maybe become your linebackers. that's how you really start to get really athletic. You start to create that speed. It's like, yeah, we had guys that, you know, coming out of high school, there are 4'4 guys that were playing corners and safeties. Yeah, well, we took them, we added 15, 20 pounds on them, and now they're 230
on the end
playing inside linebacker. And it's mm-hmm. like, man, we got dudes out there now. Because you look at, obviously, you want.
Does Nebraska have enough dudes?
No.
No?
Just watch the Ohio State game last year. I mean, that's.
Are you hopeful of the dudes?
But I think it's a mix of dudes
on the way.
You still got to have dudes, but you still have to be a physical ass football team. And I am not convinced yet we're a physical football team.
So when you look at Ohio State, they have both. Mm-hmm. Penn State has both. Mm-hmm. Michigan has both. Mm-hmm. So Iowa?
No,
they're just physical.
They're physical. They get after
Penn State or Wisconsin. They have both.
They are a mix. So they're a mix of what Nebraska could be.
Okay.
I think their talent level is equal, but Wisconsin has a better culture, physicality development right now.
Sure. My opinion. I agree with you on that. So what do you try and rope first? The West or the leader of the pack?
I think you got to take care of yourself. You got to take care of your own side of the house. I mean, you got to take care of the West. I mean, if you can't listen, if you can,
but if you take care of the East, don't you automatically beat the West?
Correct. I mean, it's kind of a micro to macro. You could convince me on that. But you know what? You still got. You could go and beat Ohio State. But still,
you could beat him this year,
right? And you could still lose to Iowa and Northwestern, and not be in Indianapolis to play him again.
Sure, good does it do?
Right, but I see it, but again, I need to be convinced. I'd like to know, Coach Riley, explain to me why I can from the top of it, I can see it, but I want to know like. Down deep, why these DBs? I get it. I mean, I understand it. They help, but O-line and D-line, that's you need that. But again, your DBs, why is it not linebackers? Why is it not, I just want to know. To me, because I'm not from that side of it. Football, I mean, I've been around football a lot. I know football pretty well, but from a scouting development, building your base as your roster, why is the DB so important?
Here's what I think. I think a couple of reasons, and I haven't talked to him about this, but if you can get some skilled dudes and send them to the league, maybe you just turn into that IT program that puts people into the league. And you've always put people into the NFL, but now it's back up to what it's been. Mm-hmm. Okay, I mean, your senior year, I mean, you were one of 4 or 5 dudes that got drafted. I mean, it's dropped off, but it wasn't. I mean, you guys had it kind of thriving, mm-hmm. okay? So I think if you can get those skilled guys, then you'll want to go to where the talent's at, where they'll send you to the league. That'll be kind of your identity. And if you get more of those skilled guys, those corners and wideouts, then maybe some of the trench warfare guys will follow. I don't know. If you got to get the quarterback first to get the left tackle, or if you got to go get the left tackle to get the quarterback. Right. I don't know, chicken or egg.
Chicken, yeah.
So I think that might be part of it. And I think when you look at the West, Fleck threw the football a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he had a first-round talent.
Sure, but he threw the football a lot. Will he throw the ball in Minnesota? Will Purdue throw the football? Yeah. Is Illinois going to throw the football? Yeah. So you really have Wisconsin and Iowa. And Iowa, what killed Nebraska against Iowa? I mean, it was the big play in the passing game a year ago. They mauled Nebraska. Their defensive line beat our offensive line. But from the defensive standpoint, Nebraska got worked on big plays by the Iowa offense.
Well, that right there.
So more athletes theoretically.
The speed was very
– Yeah.
Was off. It was – You
look super slow,
sluggish. Like
so you get more athletes,
sand.
You get better speed. It'll prevent big plays. It'll take away big play opportunities, and they're not scoring.
But maybe it's just
trickle
my,
down.
But this maybe this is my D line in me. It's like I feel like the D line can take care of damn near everything, because I know in football, there are routes that can be thrown with perfect timing
that you can't stop.
You can't stop.
Slant route, right. Like your Charlie Ward.
Right. You can't stop it. There's this route. I mean, because you have to protect. You want to play quarters. You can't. You're going to get the 8-yard comeback route and the hitch or whatever you want to call them all day. But what stops that? D-line getting their hands up, pass rush, you know, getting pressure. You don't have to get sacks. I think as much as D-line will like sacks, but it's a very overrated statistic in how great your defense can be. I mean, just getting quarterback hits and pressure.
Moving
off the spot and making them comfortable, that's just as important. To me, I get it. I understand it. But to me, I just feel like those four positions up front of the defensive line, those five positions up from the O-line, you can do so much.
And maybe it's part of the whole pitch, man. Look at, we got back here to give you guys more time to get to the quarterback.
Obviously that helps.
Maybe it's next on this wave. They're going skill guys at corners that are going to eliminate the skill guys on offense.
That's one way to go about it.
Bad.
That's
as far as the blueprint goes.
We're going to struggle creating pressure on the quarterback. Let's get our time. Back end. I mean, well, I get that. I mean, it's again, they help each other out a lot there. But man, I tell you what, it's just, you can. It's easier said than done.
You know what
I think?
You know what I think of? I think of Ohio State and Curtis Samuel and Ohio State secondary, and there was nowhere to go. There was no way to stop Samuel from getting whatever he wanted, mm-hmm. and there was no way for Nebraska's receivers to get open against that Ohio State.
Your athletes, or you're going to get them. Your DBs, your safeties, those are usually your most athletic guys. But it's just in general, this whole football team. You got to be better athletes, more physical.
And be fast.
Right.
Fast and strong, mm-hmm. and punch somebody. Mm-hmm. A guy that has that speed, that giddy up, that shiftiness, that fluidity. He's on his way to basketball. He's in L.A., but he's from 500-mile radius. Another Missouri guy, Mario Goodrich, next with us here on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Subscribe to Hail Varsity Magazine. Call 1-855-3-HUSKER or go to HailVarsity.com/subscribe.
That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing! That's amazing!
Now, back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Newest commit for Nebraska 2018, four-star standout cornerback out of Lee Summit, Mario Goodrich, with us. Mario, thanks for the time. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well, man. So you're out on the West Coast. What's going on out there?
We just got a basketball tournament out here this weekend.
That's good. All right. So you're heading west for a basketball tournament. Mario, Nebraska fans really excited that you made the choice to go to Nebraska. I wanted to talk a little bit about that as far as your process, your decision date, and why yesterday felt like the right day for you to decide to go to Nebraska.
I was already committed. I committed like a week before. But yesterday I just decided to go public with it and just let everyone know.
Mario Goodrich with us, Hail Varsity Radio. So, Mario, you went public with it, and that was something you felt like was the right time. Why was it the right time yesterday to go public?
I don't know. I just caught people off guard with it. No one was really expecting it.
Your relationship with Coach Dante Williams, give us a little insight to that.
I mean, he's like an older brother or an uncle or something. Like, you can talk to him, and he's like real cool. I mean, he's the one that made me like want to come to Nebraska.
How is he so relatable? You mentioned uncle or older brother. Many of us have had that type relationship. But how was he able to connect with you on that level?
I can just talk to him about anything, really. I mean, we talk daily, and I can just tell him how I'm feeling, really.
A few minutes here. Mario Goodrich with us, Hail Varsity Radio. So, when did Nebraska really get on your radar, and what did you know about What did you know about Nebraska?
Really, after my first time visiting in the fall, and then I knew I wanted to go back and visit again. And I didn't really know too much about them, but I knew my friend Monte was going to go to school there, but he ended up going to play baseball.
So really kind of back during the Monte Harrison days, is that when Nebraska kind of got on your radar?
Really, I still didn't know anything about him, but because I wasn't even in high school when he was in high school. And I mean, we're just close now, and I mean, me and him talk every day.
Mario, what are some things you love about playing cornerback? I mean, you're very talented at it. What makes you love the game at that position?
Being able to just like lock down team's best player as a wide receiver, and like picking off the quarterback, and like going to score for a pick six, and that's really it. I like coming up and hitting people too.
What do you think of this secondary group between yourself, Chase, and Buki? I mean, tell me a little bit about this class and how close you are with some of the guys.
I mean, we're in a group chat right now, and I mean, we just talk about like how we gonna change it or try to change the program and get back to where black shirt is supposed to be.
Is that something Coach Dante talked to you about too? Is kind of the Nebraska standard, the black shirt standard? If so, what's been the emphasis?
We haven't really talked about it, but he just mentioned that like it's a lockdown defense, like it's a lockdown defense, and that's really it.
Dante was at Washington when Marcus Peters was at Washington. I know that's a guy you really enjoy watching in Kansas City. And how did that kind of pique your interest with Coach Williams?
I mean, he's like my favorite corner to watch right now because I like how aggressive he is. And Coach Dante, I know he's coaching, so I just know if he coach him, like, then that could be me in 3 or 4 years.
Mario Goodrich is with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. A few minutes. Mario, tell me a little bit about your family and how they helped you with this decision-making process about Nebraska and then some of the other offers you had. How important was family when making the decision?
Really, my dad said it was my decision. I could choose wherever I wanted to go, but he just wanted me to explore my options first.
Who else was kind of in the main running? Who was a main consideration other than Nebraska?
We didn't really talk about anybody else. I mean, once I just saw Nebraska, I just wanted to commit.
Because
all the other schools that I talked to, like, they didn't really talk to me like Nebraska talked to me.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about your coaches at Lee Summit and the program you're coming out of.
My defensive coordinator, cornerback coach, he just went to the Cleveland Browns. He helped me build as a person and player over this last year that he was here. And I mean, our defense, it's like a college style defense, and we'll be running the same defense that the Flash will run, so I already know like most of the stuff that I'm supposed to know.
What are you confident about when it comes to making the transition to college, and what area do you think you need to get better in before you get to college to be college ready?
I'm pretty confident all the way around. I know I can work on like man pressure, jamming people off the line, just being more physical.
Is that something that is going to just take more technique work on the field, or is that a weight room thing, or is it both?
Probably both.
If there's a conversation you can share with us between you and Coach Dante, what was his reaction when you told him you were coming?
That he was happy for me, and let's get it started, basically.
There he is, Mario Goodrich with us, Hale Varsity Radio. Very talented player, 500-mile radius guy, and an athlete, corner, return man, can play wide out, and making that Nebraska secondary look good for 2018 and beyond. Mario, good luck with your basketball tournament. Thanks for a few minutes. Enjoy out west, okay?
Thank you.
There it was, Mario Goodrich and all its phone fun there, thanks to him. Caller 4 right now, barbecue passes for the Salt Dogs game Saturday. Caller 4 right now, 466-377-6800, 825-5865, Caller 4 right now.
Want to be heard?
We know he's not. Let him finish.
Call 402-466-ESPN or text HAIL to 88474 with your message. Chat with us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio and JMore44 and TJ_Henning.
Who wants to have some fun?
Now it's back to the show with Chris Schmidt and Jay Moore.
Big thanks to Husker commit Mario Goodrich for joining us. And, you know, one of our top players, part of the Hale Varsity family, she was out of the Lancaster Event Center last week, the spa show. Hopefully you got your pick. Deb the Spa Lady, Home Innovation Spas, 20th and Highway 2 in Lincoln, a location in Omaha. Deb, I saw you on Facebook and you were smiling. How are you?
Oh, I was on Facebook. We got over 6,000 views on that, so it worked. A lot of people came out and saw us last weekend at the event center. So we're back at the stores now, all tore down and back, you know, with all the tubs back at each store. And we've got great deals going on, of course. We've got a lot of the Cal Spas. We just got a couple truckloads of those. So we've got a lot of in-stock specials going on.
Okay, so you have in-stock specials, and you have an option that you can help with, be it if you want just kind of a two-seater or a many-seater. Tell me a little bit about some of the different selections you have.
Yes, we have anything from a two-person little tub up to the big swim spas. And I would just invite anyone who's not seen a swim spa in person to stop by our store, because we have our most popular model in our store. And it's unbelievable. You'll be quite surprised when you see one in person.
So that two-seater, is that called the Maverick and Goose?
It's called the D'Amour.
Ah, okay. So it's no Top Gun reference. Okay, I was just checking on that.
No.
20th and Highway 2 is where you can find and see Deb. And the Cal Spas are there for you. The swim spas, the two-person, the four-person. Big enough for your baseball team, small enough for you and Mama. And it is there at Home Innovation Spas, 20th and Highway 2. Go see Deb, the spa lady, spasonline.com. Deb, when can folks come see you Friday, and when can folks see you this weekend?
Okay, we're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, and on Saturday, 10 to 4.
That'll be awesome. Deb, we'll be by.
Okay. Sounds great, Chris.
Take care.
Have
there
a good
she is.
Weekend.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Deb, the spa lady, she was out there showing off all those spas at the Lancaster Event Center. If you're coming into town this holiday weekend, go see Deb and leave with a spa. You will love it. Promise you that. I'm working on the wife.
On a spa?
Yeah, to get one for the
new house.
For the new casa.
New digs.
Yes.
That'd
be great.
Why wouldn't you?
Especially, I mean, I've kind of...
You have a man cave?
Yeah, Carson and I will have a giant man cave. Mm-hmm. I don't want to put it downstairs inside. But I've kind of trolled through my neighborhood and... We're going to be in a good neighborhood to have hot tub parties.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice at a boy.
I've trolled through it.
Pre-game scouting, that boy. Little pre-game scout. Never hurt anyone.
No. You got to pay attention.
Uh-huh.
There we go. What are you doing tonight, Bird?
I'm going to go home, and Mom's back in town from being in Baltimore for a couple days for work. So go see go see her and the little one. You can't really call him little one.
Does that kid eat? When does he not eat?
It's every 3 hours.
Is he up to 250 yet?
Almost.
Benching?
Yeah, almost, yeah.
That's what I thought.
Large and in charge, that's for sure.
I like it. Bird, good to see you, brother. Thanks for coming by. TJ, you're awesome. Thanks for spending time with us here on Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com. Back with you at 4 tomorrow. And thanks to Mario Goodrich for his time. Talk to you tomorrow.